Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL match up like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
G&D live on the Fan in DC, Richmond, coast to coast on the Odyssey app. And if you want to watch us streaming via video on 106.7 The Fan's YouTube channel. The local football team has got a bright future. New quarterback looking sharp. It's time for you to plan your future as well. The exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm Kondorian Murad, can help you update your last will and testament. Set up a trust. Get your family squared away. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys. Visit kmlawyers.com and be sure to tell them G&D sent you so that you can get a discount. Go to kmlawyers.com. On the Beltway Blitz, the NFL, the Commanders, and right now, the Nationals. Charlie Slows calls games every single night here on The Fan with Dave Jagler. Last night was probably not his most fun broadcast of the season as he was on the call of a disappointing 10-1 loss for the Nats. Charlie, I want to start with Mitchell Parker. Not only did he struggle on the mound, 7 hits and 5 earned runs, I don't remember ever seeing a pitcher have the problems he's had as a fielder, fielding his position this season. What do you make of that?
That's something he's definitely got to improve upon. 5 errors. Last night doesn't get an error, but on a ground ball to the right side, he doesn't break to first. Gallo bobbles the ball, and Gallo was fielding the ball cleanly, was not going to be able to get to first in time. The pitcher had to be there, and this has happened. You know, Parker, as a left-handed pitcher, falls up a little bit to the third base side. But when that ball was hit, he never moved off the rubber. When the ball was already to Gallo, he hadn't broken yet for first. There's no way he's going to beat the runner, and you just can't have that happen. You're giving away outs, and it ended up being a bigger inning than it needed to be. You just can't afford those kind of mistakes.
Charlie, big picture for Mitchell Parker, just kind of drilling down a little bit. I'd still say this season is a pretty smashing success, even if it feels like he may be running out of gas here at the end, going further maybe than he ever has over the course of a season. I don't know how many more starts they're going to give him before it's all said and done. But I know it's probably not ending on the note that he wants or maybe the team wants. But big picture, again, that's a major league starter that they kind of uncovered here. And I'm pretty pleased with it. Just sort of a bummer that it's not maybe ending the way that we want.
Right. I agree completely. Everybody's going to have things to work on. I mean, he's 24 years old, and he started the year in AAA, pitched 4 innings there. So, I mean, this guy didn't have a lot of experience at that level, let alone come right to the major leagues with the early injury to Josiah Gray. And then, 28 starts in the big leagues. He probably gets one more with the Nationals having 11 games to go, including tonight. I think it's a success for him, success for DJ Hurst, big success moving forward for Jake Irvin. I mean, the pitching is long what we talked about in the first half of the year, that was a major step forward. Mm-hmm. And so the team ERA is 4.30. It was a shade over 5 last year. So that's a big drop off, even though you could look at it and say, yeah, they were in the 3.7, 3.75 range in June, and that's jumped up a half a run or so in the second half of the season. But still, guys who have not pitched at this level before, I think that's a big success, and they'll be much, much better for it going forward next year.
Charlie, C.J. Abrams back in the lineup, 1-for-3 in the leadoff spot. Great to see him playing again here as they get ready to play out the string. How will you sum up his season when you look back? When he was good, he was exceptional. When he was bad, those stretches lasted a while.
Yeah, great first half, not so great second half. So you're looking for more consistency over the course of a whole season. And again, another very young player is doing this, for the really second year as a full-time major league player, coming up a couple of years ago after the trade in the final couple of months of the season. So last year, 151 games, .245, 18 homers, 64 runs batted in. He has more home runs. The RBIs are about the same. He does not have the 47 stolen bases in 51 tries he had last year, 29 out of 41 this year. 22 errors last year. He's hit 17 this year. So, I mean, you could say, okay, let's look at next year. He's going to turn 24 on October the 3rd. We hope that next year he really takes a major step forward over the course of a whole season. An all-star in the first half of the year. If you had flipped the two halves of the year and the second half of the year is the way he started the year, he wouldn't have been an all-star. So a lot of times you see an all-star is based on the first half of the year. They don't pick all-stars over the course of the whole season.
Charlie, does Jacob Young play center field for this team next year, or are they going to go in a kind of different direction where it's Cruz and maybe somebody else, maybe free agent to be or someone we're not thinking of in right field? Or how do you think it's going to go?
You know, at the beginning of the year, you would have thought Jacob Young comes up when Victor Robles gets hurt right away and he's playing. Is he an everyday center fielder? Does he hit enough? I think he's hitting the high 250s. He's got over 30 steals, gold glove caliber center field. If you improve your offense in other places, be it at first base, designated hitter, where the Nationals really struggle to be, competitive what other teams produce offensively from those positions, and then you have Cruz in right and Wood in left, I think you could live with that. It just depends how you want to make up your team next year, where you're going to get more offense from, because they need more offense.
Charlie, thank you, buddy. We appreciate you.
You got it, guys.
Be good. Talk to you soon. We'll be listening to Charlie and Dave. Pregame coming up at about 6:40. Right here on The Fan. Let's talk football. Mitch Tischler, Monumental Sports, joins us now. Mitch, I thought the X was a good place to be on Sunday. Not only did the locals get a win, but there were a lot of fans there wearing burgundy and gold. The vibes were pretty good, and there have been a lot of changes to the stadium.
Yeah, I mean, I think the stadium showed out well. Granted, I think it helps a little bit that the Giants are down and fans are a little angry about it, but you know what? There wasn't nearly as much blue in the stands as we've seen in years past. And the crowd was into it, and they were loud, and they got to watch a win.
It's obviously so important to win football games. You look at the home opener, and you mentioned the vibes and everything else. But big picture, you glass half full or glass half empty when it comes to the offense, where they move it down the field, well over 400 yards. The rushing game looked really good. You get to the red zone six times. I'll normally take my chances. But then when they got there, dun, 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 we all kind of know what ended up happening. Glass half full or half empty, Mitch?
Oh, I mean, more than half full. I am very excited about what I've seen from this offense in 2 weeks, and particularly this week. I mean, they racked up 425 yards of total offense, which is just a really good number. They didn't punt a single time. You mentioned the red zone appearances. Part of what I've kind of come across when I look at what happened in the red zone is I think they got a little conservative there. And I think part of it was they knew the Giants weren't going to be able to kick field goals. So they were just trying to put points on the board. And certainly the false start penalties didn't help at all. And that's certainly something they need to clean up a little bit. But I think when you look at the play calling, especially when you got to those, third and goals from the 10, they were a little more conservative because they knew if they just sat back and kicked the field goal, that was ultimately probably going to be enough to win this football game. And it was.
Austin Seibert named Special Teams Player of the Week today. A guy who had a really good game kicking a bunch of chip shots, or the answer to the kicking problem in 2024?
Yeah, I'm not ready to say the answer to the kicking problem because the aggregate yards on those seven field goals had to have been the fewest aggregate yards of any guy with that many field goals. They were all so short. But it's good to see him go 7-for-7, and hopefully he can continue doing it and keep doing well in the kickoffs. And ultimately, you want a kicker who can be consistent inside of 50, but in this day and age in the NFL, if you want to, put a stamp on answering that kicker question, you got to prove you can kick some of the longer field goals. So I'm not ready to say it yet, but certainly great to see a Commanders kicker go 7-for-7.
Defense, it's only been a couple weeks, but right down at the bottom of those rankings, you got to really work that wrist and kind of scroll down motion on the computer mouse there to find where they are in most of the searches there, Mitch. How much improvement do you expect over the course of this year?
That's a good question. I would say marginal. You hope that they get better in their, communication on the back end, which, quite frankly, Commanders teams, Washington football teams, Redskins teams, as long as I've covered the team, have always talked about improved communication. So it's a little bit of coach speak from the players. To me, I think as much as we harp on the secondary and the issues back there, I think it starts up front, and the fact that teams are able to run the ball on them as consistently as they do, as well, combined with the fact that they're not getting to the quarterback. And, you know, you want Daron Payne and John Allen, your two second and third highest paid players on the team, to go out and make plays and get after them. But you can't excuse the edge rushers who aren't getting any pressure either. And so I think as this thing moves forward, I think you might start seeing Joe Witt and Dan Quinn get a little more aggressive and start bringing some extra bodies and hope that they can put pressure on that quarterback early. And so their secondary doesn't have to cover so long. But I mean, I don't know what players we're looking at on the defensive side of the ball that we think are going to take big steps between now and the end of the season. I mean, a couple of the young guys, Mikey Sainer still, you know, Jordan McGee when he comes back, hopefully a little bit. But most of these guys are kind of known entities, and you kind of know what you're going to get from them.
Give me something you love from Jaden Daniels' game so far and something you want him to work on.
Well, the number one thing I want him to work on is throwing the ball away. I think we've seen a couple times now in the 2 weeks, he has a good awareness in the pocket and he gets outside. There are times that, you know, it's better to be a little safe and throw the ball away and, you know, live for another down and not take, you know, some of those extra big hits. But at the same time, I like his aggressiveness and I don't want to necessarily take away from that. I just think you need to kind of curb it down a little bit. And that aggressiveness is both in the run game and in the pass game. And, you know, I really liked the throw that he made to Zach Ertz on the right sideline for the first down, that Ertz kind of had to wrestle the ball away from the defender to get there. Throw that ball on a line. Get that ball out there to him and let him catch that ball and not have to fight a defender for it. So I like the aggressiveness. I just want him to play within himself and play within the offense a little bit more.
Mitch, thank you as always, buddy. Talk soon.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, guys.
Yeah, dude.
Be good, bro. That's Mitch Tischler from Monumental Sports on Grant and Danny. We do have breaking news coming into 106.7 The Fan right now.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And it's Caps and Hockey News. All of our breaking news on The Fan brought to you by BetQL. Smarter bets start with BetQL. Get 3 free days of BetQL access by downloading the BetQL app or visiting BetQL.com. And this is in regards to a star in this town who helped win a championship. TJ Oshie, the Washington Capitals alternate captain. TJ Oshie completed his medical exam, according to the team today, and his status is listed moving forward as injured. Oshie's expected to be placed on long-term injured reserve. He's going to be placed on the injured reserve list during the season and throughout the season. Oshie and Capitals Senior VP GM Chris Patrick have released the following statement about Oshie's health situation. Quote from Oshie, The last season was challenging for me, my family, and my teammates as I dealt with a chronic back injury that kept me out of the lineup. I have used the offseason to explore and pursue long-term solutions for my injury. I remain committed to the process, and I'm working and doing my best to regain total health. In the meantime, I will continue to help and support my teammates and the organization in any way I can. I greatly appreciate all of our fans during this time. And that's from TJ Oshie. So TJ Oshie will not be ready to start the year, is being placed on injured reserve. That's the breaking news. Now, if we could editorialize a little bit, and this is no longer the news as much as our opinions, if we can opine, this feels to me like the announcement that TJ Oshie is not going to be playing anymore. TJ Oshie will try to get back, I'm sure. The way LTIR works in hockey is when he's listed on injured reserve, his money doesn't count against your cap. We saw the Capitals very active, turned over almost a third of their roster this offseason with some premium players. They brought in a lot of talent. It's a very new-look team, Danny. And I think they were banking on the fact that Nicholas Backstrom and TJ Oshie were not going to be working against the salary cap. And so this is not a surprise to anybody, even though it is sad and disappointing. But Oshie's back was locking up. It had become a big problem. And so pretty clearly to me, they're not going to use the R word here. He's not retiring, because if he retires, he leaves a lot of money on the table. But this is a way forward, like they did with Backstrom last year and now this year, where you can place him on LTIR. He's still a part of the organization. And while he's getting paid, the money does not count against your salary cap.
Yeah, so this is one of those everybody benefits from it, doing it this way, right? Where, you know, and the rule machinations are different in every sport. So I think it's important distinction that you just offered there for how hockey works, which I think is really, really good.
And it's not dollar for dollar, to be clear, but you get a pretty big discount on the salary against the cap.
So if he retired, then, you know, maybe that money counts. I mean, it's just this whole thing, remember, with the Nationals and Strasburg and how to handle that. And nobody was really sure what the protocol was going to be. The Caps and Oshie seem to have worked this out. But so first and foremost, Oshie, we'll talk about him here in a second, but we dealing with kind of, put that aside for a brief moment, this benefits the team greatly, to be honest with you, right? Like, basically waiting for somebody that wasn't ever going to be able to do it is, that's not good for anyone, right? In other words, like thinking about, hey, when Backstrom comes back and Backstrom's himself, see what this team can do. That wasn't going to happen. And I feel bad about that. It's awful. It stinks. It's the worst part about pro sports, any sport, frankly, is that the games still count. They keep churning, and we need to put a team on the ice with or without a guy that's done everything right at all times for the organization. That applies both to Backstrom and for Oshie. So this is better for the team that we're not going to be waiting around going, well, once Oshie comes back, then what does that mean for Connor McMichael? Then what does that mean for this second-line winger? Is he going to slot with this? You don't have to worry about that stuff anymore, right? You're sort of making this decision now. Get out in front.
9 seasons in D.C. for TJ Oshie, who started his career with the St. Louis Blues. TJ Oshie, because of likability, how he plays with grit and tenacity and aggressiveness and physicality. I mean, he plays a 237-pound game at 185 pounds, right?
That's the way to put it.
People love Oshie for good reason. He's also just a mensch of a human being. You're not going to find a better dude, a better person, a better family man. This is a guy who has been one of the better players on the cap since his first day here. But after 9 years, I mean, his body has just kind of broken down on him. If you look at it, dating back to the 2020 pandemic season, really, it's just been different. 21, he played in only 44 games. 2 years ago, just 58 games. Last year, 52 games. And it was constant. He'd be away, he'd come back, he's hurt. He'd be away, he'd come back, he's hurt. He's dealt with many concussion problems, which is scary. He's one of the players in the league that started wearing this like neck brace that helps with collisions and head trauma and the way you get whiplash. And this is now the back issue where he'll go to the ice and it quite literally locks up on him. And he can't stand up. He can't walk. He has to crawl. You know, we've seen this off the ice, and it's scary, man. He's got 4 kids. You know, he's got a brand new baby. The 4th child he's got with his wife. They live here in the area. And we talked about this with Tua a few days ago. But at some point, you've got to decide, am I sure I'm going to be able to live the life I want to live if I keep doing this? And Oshie, pretty clearly, after 16 years and 1,000 games in the NHL with a Stanley Cup championship, who could ever forget the parade, back to back. When he was drinking the
beer through his
sweater because he was parched. He just couldn't talk. You know, he had no, like you said,
screaming his head off for 2 weeks. Yeah.
But now at 37 years old, this is certainly not an official. I'm hanging him up. But I also don't know if you get to do that without foregoing a lot of the money that you're still owed.
Yep.
So you stay in shape. You if you wake up one day and you're all better, you call the team Adam Banks style and hold the stick out. Maybe you get to play in the game. That's a deep cut nobody will get. But yeah, I think for TJ Hoshi, all I can say is I love you. You're an American hero. You're one of my favorite players ever. And you're the man. Thank you for the Stanley Cup.
I would like to echo that. One of the great bits of sports theater I've ever seen is that shootout bit for Team USA. I love you so much forever. That was so fantastic. So the parallels that you mentioned are obvious between the conversation we had about Tua and then we're having about Oshie. The difference to me is one guy's done it. That's 38-year-old, 1,010 games, Stanley Cup champion, been to the pinnacle. Everything that you've got, you have given. Right? Like you gave it the office, dude. You know what I mean? Like there was nobody who would go, man, I really wish TJ Oshie had gotten more out of his ability. That's never the comment about that guy. Right? I remember once we were doing a show from Caps training camp and I couldn't get over it. Like he and I are the same size, but if you watch him on the ice, you're going, that's a 6'3", you know, Lexi Protas type monster who's everywhere all at once, hitting guys, blocking shots, winning puck battles in the corner. You don't think of him as like just a regular sized human being that you could just bump into in Clarendon.
He's a little guy, man.
Yeah, but he plays enormous.
Yeah, it's
like
crazy.
A grown ass man who did everything right.
He just got everything out of his skill set.
Love that
and
guy.
And he's immensely talented and has great hands and all those things, but he also outworked everybody around him probably at every single level for a long, long time. So quickly then, here's a little Caps game.
Okay.
Because they have so many new players.
All right.
I want you to play my guy or somebody else's guy.
Oh, gosh. Okay, here we go.
So these are new players or old players. Ready? Hopefully all these guys are your guys by the end of the year.
I was going to say, yeah.
Dylan Strome?
So what am I? It's our guy or new guy?
Yeah. I think it's overcomplicated.
I know Dylan Strome.
How about
returning or new?
Do you have a deep file? Let's say that, okay? Dylan Strome.
I got a file.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pierre-Luc Dubois?
Not yet.
No. Andrew Mangiapane?
That's going to be new.
Okay. Connor McMichael.
I know Connor.
Okay, very good. Hendrix LaPierre.
I know Hendrix.
Okay. What about Taylor Radish?
That's newer for me.
Work on that one. Yep. What about Brandon Duhaime?
No, that's going to be newer.
Okay, very good.
Mm-hmm.
How about John Carlson?
I know Carly. Shoot, yeah, Carly.
What about Jacob Chychrun?
That's newer.
That's spelled, by the way, C-H-Y-C-H-R-U-N, Chychrun. Jacob Chychrun.
Mm.
What about Rasmus Sandin?
I know Rasmus Sandin. Okay. Old friend Rasmus Sandin.
How about Matt Roy?
That's new.
Okay.
It's going to be new.
Martin Ferravari?
I know, Marty.
Very good. That'll pretty much do it, I would say, for the most part. Charlie Lindgren?
I know Charlie. Chucko.
Logan Thompson?
This is a hockey player?
Dude, it's new, man.
Yeah, this is new.
They got Luc Dubois and Mangiapane maybe on the second line, Radish on the third line, Duhaime on the fourth line, top line defense with Chychrun, second line defense with Roy, new netminder to compete with Lindgren. It's going to be a very different Capitals team helping Ovi gun for Wayne Gretzky's record this year.
41 shy, dude.
We're right around the corner. We talked yesterday about Ovi and his 39th birthday, so hopefully he celebrated in fashion, in Ovi fashion, in fine style last night. Right now, as promised, though, caller 10 at 800-636-1067. Congratulations. You are winning tickets to the HF Festival this Saturday, September 21st at Nationals Park, featuring the Postal Service, Death Cab for Cutie, Incubus, Bush, Garbage, Jimmy Eat World, and so much more. Great show. Going to be a fun day all day long at the park. For tickets and more event information, go to thefandc.com/events, courtesy of IMP. We're Grant and Danny next. How do you feel about the Commanders' offensive line so far? This is The Fan. Alongside Danny Ruye, I'm Grant Paulson. You are locked into The Fan. Thank you for making the show part of your day. Top of the hour in 30 minutes. We will give you a tour of the NFC East. We'll check in with a reporter from the Eagles, Cowboys, and Giants beats to get the latest on the division. A division, I might add. I know Danny does not want me to tell you this, but I'm going to tell you anyway, Danny. Mm-hmm. Cover your ears. Earmuffs. You can say whatever you want. The Washington Commanders are in first place in the NFC East. Everything's okay,
right? It's fine.
Everything's
fine.
Everything's fine.
It's fine.
Not your favorite bit. but it's a bit we're going to do for another when's Monday night.
I was going to say, you got 6 days.
Give me 72 more hours to play that one up a little bit. That's all
you're
I'm
talking about
for.
Your first place Commanders?
Who's in first? Not the Eagles.
No.
Not the Cowboys.
Because they beat the Giants. Whatever. Go I know ahead. It's a bit. I was going to say, if anybody got a chance to play the Giants in week two, they'd be in first place also. Oh. But whatever.
Do you need any more cold water to add to your bucket?
No.
Pour on over everything?
I just don't want parades. Calm down.
It's not a parade to just acknowledge that they're in first place in the standings. That's all I'm doing.
Let's stop finger gunsing everybody. You're yucking it up.
Did you hear Hall & Oates playing?
You in your mind? Your eyes are playing Hall & Oates.
There is no Hall & Oates. I'm not celebrating anything. I'm observing.
Your lips are filled with smile.
And reporting. Is that a Kevin James movie?
Was that what? Was that Seth Rogen?
But was Kevin James in it too?
Yeah, because remember there's Paul Blart.
I don't think it is a Kevin James movie. I think he is a mall cop. That's what I'm confused.
Yeah, there's Paul Blart mall cop, and then there's Observe and Report. So you remember like when Armageddon and Deep Impact came out like 5 minutes from each other?
Right.
For some reason, they're like the next wave is going to be we'll do mall security. And Paul Blart and Observe and Report came out within like an hour and a half.
I have a fact for you about Observe and Report that you will not know.
All right.
The 2009 comedy. There's a actress in that movie named Colette Wolfe who went to King George High School.
No.
Oh, yeah. She's our only actress or actor who hit it big in Hollywood. I think she got in with and became friends. I could be wrong on the how this worked out. But Danny McBride is from the Fredericksburg area.
Mm-hmm.
And she ended up in kind of that group. But she was in like Hot Tub Time Machine, I remember, was a big movie she was in. She was in Observe and Report. She worked behind the counter and I think was like one of like Seth Rogen's love interest, maybe.
Oh, yeah. I've definitely seen her before. I would never have pulled the name, but yeah, that's that.
So I don't know what else other than those couple movies, maybe young adult, but Colette Wolfe, I was in a lot of classes with her younger sister, Bethany Wolfe, who was a year older than me. Colette was older than me by
Colette's my age.
Yeah, she's exactly. She's older than my older brother.
Listen to this filmography. Hot Tub Time Machine, Observe and Report, Hot Tub Time Machine 2.
Let's go.
Here we go.
Anything? What else we got?
A movie called Young Adult, which I've never heard of.
That was actually a sneaky good movie. Do you not remember that?
I literally have no file on it. I'm not doing
That's
a bit.
That's Patton Oswalt and Charlize Theron. I loved that movie. I don't remember her being in it, but I'll have to watch it again.
What are they doing there?
I'm pretty sure she goes back home, and it's like a rom-com kind of deal with her and Patton Oswalt, if memory serves.
Well, how about this, by the way? Not a huge role. She was an Interstellar.
Would not have had that.
That
in
is pretty role. Silly. Her character was named Ms. Hanley in Interstellar.
Okay.
I don't remember that.
So I'm going to do an impression.
All right.
I'm Danny. King George County. I'm sleeping on King George County.
Stop.
We got him everywhere, man. Jermon Bushrod, Super Bowl champion.
Yep.
Colette Wolfe, actress. See?
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Al Bumbry, former Oriole. Al Bumbry, King George County. You don't remember him?
I do. Of course I remember him.
Yeah, okay. We got him everywhere. You don't give King George enough credit, I don't think.
I think I give the right amount of credit.
Do you?
Yeah.
Did you give us Colette Wolfe?
I didn't have... You know what? If that's your case, you win in court.
Thank you.
I did not have Colette Wolfe.
What does St. Albans have?
Jeffrey Wright is a pretty good actor. He's been in a lot of stuff.
Okay.
Clancy Brown, also another really good actor, has been in a lot of stuff.
Never heard of him.
Lester Hayes, the Jets Ring of Honor. Jonathan Ogden, Pro Football Hall of Famer. That's just like for acting and football.
Mm.
We have other stuff too.
That's real interesting. Danny,
mm-hmm.
How do you feel about the O-line for the Commanders so far?
Run blocking. Pretty good. Run blocking is a thing. I don't know how much of it is aided by Daniels. I don't know how much of it is aided by, you know, the way defenses are playing them. But I do know this. They've been opening up some holes. It looks like Brian Robinson gets his momentum going, has plenty of room before he gets touched. In years past, it was Brian Robinson fights through 9,000 people, like extras in a kung fu movie, to get 2.5 yards. And anything he gets is like he earned it. Now it feels like he's got some space to maneuver. Same with Eckler and otherwise. It's not just on third down long give up plays on like, you know, third and long draws or something like that to the scat back. This is whoever gets the football has a little real estate here. And so run blocking wise, I feel pretty good. Pass blocking, I think part of why they're calling what they're calling, which is everything quick, everything short, everything get out in a hurry. One part, make it easy for Daniels. The other part to me is we don't really trust this group to hold up for longer developing pass plays. We don't have the weapon on the outside to really do it, and we don't really trust our guys up and down this line to be able to hold up in kind of straight drop back pass pro. So I think what they've been asked to do, they've done a pretty decent job.
Yeah, I totally agree. I wouldn't even differentiate between the run and the pass blocking to say I've been really impressed by their offensive line so far. Considering what a story it was all offseason, considering how much you and I harped on the problems that could come, and it's very early, and I will even say, too, they have not necessarily played a group I was worried about, although I did think the Giants had a much
I was worried about them. I was.
I just thought they would have a more difficult group to block. But if you look at it through two games at this point, Cornelius Lucas has been very good. He's the highest graded pass blocker on the team via PFF at 80.1. Tyler Biadasz has been terrific in that regard, 78.6, second highest. I think keeping John Bates in honestly helps. He's really, really good on the edge of the offensive line at helping out tackles. Ben Sinnott's done a pretty good job blocking and protecting as well. Sam Cosmi's been awesome. I think Nick Allegretti's been very, very solid. Wiley's been okay. His grade of 51.8 is the only of the linemen who's actually got a bad pass blocking grade. The other one is Brandon Coleman, the rookie, and that's because he got beat a couple times by Thibodeau, who had two quarterback hits this past game. Mm-hmm. Like, think about it. Dexter Lawrence is maybe the best pass rushing defensive tackle in the NFL right now. In the game against Washington on Sunday, he had zero counting stats other than tackles. Zero. Not one tackle for loss, not one hit on the quarterback, not one pressure, not one pass defended. Like, he did zippy in that game. That's a big, big deal for their interior. So I love that. If I wanted to pick nits, the penalties, yep. And that was more this week than the Tampa game, but Cosmi had two false starts. Allegretti had a false start. Collectively, as a group, they had five false starts, which can never happen. But I'm hard-pressed to remember just plays where Jaden Daniels didn't really have a chance. There was one blitz that came from his left over the left guard that, if you remember, like the C's opened up, it was a straight blitz that got to him on a sack. And that was such a quick pressure immediately from a guy coming downhill at the snap that that's something you almost think either Biadasz or Daniels should have figured out before the snap.
Yeah, someone should have noticed. I don't know who. Right?
Because the way it played out, it was not like someone did their job wrong. It was like, we didn't account for that correctly. They fooled us. Mm-hmm. So whether you want to blame Daniels or Biadasz or whoever was responsible, go for it. But for the most part, again, there was five sacks this past week, which sounds bad. You could maybe put one on the line if you wanted to. I think two of them were on RPOs, which definitely aren't their fault. And there might not be anybody's fault. It was just Daniels pulled it, and then the pass wasn't there. And when that happens, you're kind of a sitting duck.
Yeah.
So those two are, you can just call them aborted plays or whatever. There's three other ones, and at least two of those are probably on the quarterback, kind of running into, one where Eckler picked up an oncoming defender, anchored, and kind of blew him up. And then Daniels kind of got quick, happy feet, left the pocket. He didn't really have to. He had nothing but protection and time, and he ran into a sack. But that's going to happen. He's young. No harm, no foul there, really, as long as that doesn't become a trend. I don't know, man. I think it's early. I want to see more out of Coleman. I want to see more snaps. He went from playing a little over a dozen snaps to 22 snaps in week two. I'm happy so far. I think they've been good in that area.
So there are data points that I want to see because I'm curious, but also hope that the game situation doesn't lead to it. And here's what I mean. In a game like you're playing against Tampa, you're down big, and conventional NFL offense for a team that's trying to compete for the playoffs and go somewhere this year is, hey, we got to hurry up and drop back and throw a whole bunch, right? And now the defense knows it's coming. You know it's coming. There's no hiding. There's no pretending. We got to throw it 35, 40 times in this game to try to come back and win it, right? I'd love to see what happens in that kind of circumstance. Now, I don't want them to be in that situation because it means they're losing. It also means that it exposes Daniels to more, and maybe at some point you're going to have to go through it. I just don't know that I want it just yet, but I'd love to see what it would look like if they had to hold up in pass pro without the threat of running, without the threat of some of the play action, without the threat of some of the read option, RPO game, et cetera. So that's a data point that's TBD. And, as defenses kind of figure it out, I don't think the Giants can really stop anything. But they said, all right, fine, you want to throw it short, we'll take that away. You had a counterpunch. Credit to everybody involved. Is that going to be the case every week? I don't know the answer to that. So but through two games, all you can do is play the two games that you have. And I've been pretty impressed.
Yeah. What do you guys think so far about the line? What have you liked? What haven't you? 800-636-1067. We can get to your thoughts on that. Also next, I wanted figure out which NFC team is the most likely to win the Super Bowl as of right now, this minute. with the 49ers banged up, the Rams off to a terrible start, the Lions had a bad loss to the Bucs. The best teams in the conference through 2 weeks are the Saints and Tampa Bay. I don't know that anybody's buying tickets on those teams to win the title today at sportsbooks. Who's the most likely NFC team to come out of the conference? Next on G&D.
Here's Kamara, running right side. Kamara surges in for the touchdown.
Try to gain it here on second down.
Pressure coming, they set up a screen. Oh, there's a lot of room. Alvin Kamara, room to roll. Alvin Kamara's going to score. Touchdown.
2 of 4 scores on the day for Alvin Kamara of the Saints. They have scored on every single one of their possessions through 2 games this season. If you're a punter for the Saints, you could just take September off, I guess. They have also been under center 70% of the time. No team has lived under center to that extent in the last 10 years. Clint Kubiak's got something going on down there. A Kyle Shanahan disciple, a former Gary Kubiak son, obviously, Mike Shanahan disciple as well. But that offense is humming in New Orleans. Are they the team to beat in the NFC? We'll get into that in just a couple of moments. First, though, Sam wanted to weigh in on the offensive line so far out in Gainesville. What do you think of the Commanders? I think PFF's got them number 20 in blocking against, pass rush. We've seen some other metrics, analytically where they're as low as 22, but eyeball test says they've been okay, Sam.
Hey, gentlemen, totally agree. I think the bottom line is we can say this. They have exceeded expectations, right? So if we put them on a grading scale, I'd grade them out as a B. If you want to talk situational football, like we always do, the penalties are horrendous, continually over and over in the red zone. That can't happen. But overall, yeah, pleasantly surprised again, as you guys have mentioned, short sample size through 2 games. Let's see what happens when they play some of the bigger boys. But, yeah, got to be happy so far. Let's clean up the penalties and let's see some more anger and passion out of our head coach when that happens, and we'll be good to go.
Thanks, buddy. What I worry about with this line today is what I worried about before the season, which is to say when you go up against T.J. Watt or Myles Garrett or some game-wrecking, world-eating defensive end, what's going to happen? I don't trust the tackle position. They addressed the interior, $10 million for Biadasz. They bet on Allegretti, who's been pretty good, and we know Cosmi's legit.
As an incumbent, yeah.
But it's Andrew Wiley at right tackle. For whatever reason, I know Thibodeau had given them fits in the past. He's mostly been disappointing, actually. And a big story in New York coming out of Week 1 was that he didn't do anything in the first game. Like, he's off to a slow start. Now, if you want to say Brian Burns, who they traded for, is a beast, he's really, really good. He was quiet in the game. So credit where it's due there to Wiley or whoever else needs it. But I still have those same concerns. Like, we saw T.J. Watt twice in 2 games basically take the game over. He single-handedly beat the Falcons in Week 1, essentially. I don't know if they can handle a guy like that, but maybe that's where either Sinnott or Bates is going to come into play.
Yeah, Micah Parsons is on the schedule a couple times. T.J. Watt's on the schedule. The Ravens defense that always seems to generate pass rushes on the schedule. More daunting opponents are coming, and it's not their fault they haven't played those guys yet. These are tests that we haven't been able to grade and turn in.
But I'm with him. If C is average, to me, that's the worst you could give this line so far. I also would give them a B. I think they've played above average football.
I do too. And again, I think a lot of it, as we talk about Jaden Daniels, is the construction. I think it's to hide the weakness, right? Again, you're not going to see a ton of long developing down the football field pass plays. You're going to pick and choose. There'll be moments. I mean, they took a shot at the start of the second half against Tampa to Terry McLaurin. But I don't think they're going to major in stuff that takes a long time for Daniels, for them. I think that's part of the program. And it's smart, by the way. That's what I would do.
Also, Daniels helps them. And I don't just mean being able to get away or run out of pressures or something. Just having a guy who can run in the same way that the running game gets better because it's 11 on 11, you're not going to blitz a guy like Jaden Daniels as much as you might a guy where you always know where he's going to be. Because if it doesn't get home, you're screwed. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
So I think that helps an offensive line a little bit, too. And the fact that they can move him around and bootleg him and keep him out of the pocket sometimes, when you don't know where the quarterback's at, it just makes it harder to pass rush. I think that's common sense. You heard the Kamara highlight coming in, though, because I wanted to pin you down right now on the team you would put money on to come out of the NFC. So at this moment currently, the Saints, Vikings, and Seahawks are all surprise 2-0 teams. New Orleans having dominated the Cowboys and shredded the Panthers, the Vikings, who beat the Giants, fairly unimpressive, but crushed them in week one, and then very impressively beat the 49ers in week two. Seattle hasn't really played anybody yet, but Denver in week one, New England in week two. And then the other unbeaten team is Tampa Bay, that was actually a playoff team last year. But the teams that we think are really good, Detroit, bad loss this weekend. San Francisco, a lot of injuries, bad loss this weekend. Dallas looked terrible this weekend. The Packers are 1-1, but they don't have Jordan Love right now. The Rams are 0-2, and everybody's hurt. I don't want to say you can write them off, but it's about as close 2 weeks in as
I've got the pen out to write them.
as it gets. So today you've got to walk up to a window at Thom's watch bar at his sports book when we're in Cincinnati, and you've got to put money down on someone to come out of the conference. Who is it?
I'm still going to go San Francisco. I look at their loss this week to Minnesota as that, for whatever reason, they don't match up well against Minnesota. Two straight years they've lost that game and haven't looked like themselves.
McCaffrey's out and hurt.
Yep.
Debo's out and hurt.
Mm-hmm. I think they'll tread water, and then if and when those guys come back, now, again, I don't think McCaffrey's his season ending. I think the same for Debo. They always seem to have that little flag, a lot of Qs next to their name. But even without McCaffrey, you're still pretty prolific if you've got Samuel. If you've got Samuel, Kittle, name that generic running back in Kyle Shanahan's system, you can get some rushing yards. Not as good as McCaffrey. I'm not saying he is, but I think they'll be okay in that regard. This to me is about the offensive line getting right. I think their defense is still one of the best in the NFC. I trust them even with a setback here early on.
So I'll go differently to be different as much as anything else, but I'm going to say Green Bay because winning without Jordan Love blew me away. And I know it was just the Colts, and we don't know if they're any good, but it was how they did it. Matt LaFleur deserves a freaking medal for the plan he put together. The high school offense, basically, that he ran to get to 16 points, rushing for 260 with Malik Willis as his quarterback. And it was a decent game. Willis went 12 of 14 for 120 yards and a touchdown in that game, by the way. Love says he's going to try to play this weekend. I don't believe that. I think that he won't play. Let's say they lose to the Titans, which they might win that game. But regardless, he'll be back in time. They got the Rams coming up. I like what I've seen from Green Bay. They got to iron some things out defensively, but if they're able to win games without Love, they almost probably could have, should have won the game they lost in week one in a weird environment on the road with terrible field. So I like what I've seen from them, as strange as it sounds, at 1-1, but it's mostly because they were able to win without Jordan Love.
Yeah, defensively right there against the Colts was really, really impressive to me.
Patrick in Fredericksburg, I'm going to squeeze you in. We only got about 30 seconds here, but who's your team in the NFC to watch?
I'll say Bucks because it depends on how hot Baker Mayfield can get down the stretch. But if Baker Mayfield's hot in February or January and February, I mean, they're all the makings of a playoff team, elite wide receivers, a great defense. And I think Todd Bowles is actually a decent head coach. So that's just my thought. But I think the Bucks are a team to watch out for.
It's a great call, man. Yeah. I'll say this. Baker is not falling victim to the lack of the passing stuff. He's got 5 tutties through 2 weeks with an interception. Now 4 of those came against Washington without a pick, by the way. So 1-1 this past week. But 474 yards through the air, completing 74%. He's also got a rushing touchdown. He's off to a great start. They got a good defense, excellent receiving core. They made the playoffs. They won a playoff game by 23 points against Philly last year. I think Tampa is completely slept on.
Yeah, they are. They're in the class of good, but maybe not exceptional. But that's plenty good enough right now, if that makes sense. Like, they're a playoff team again.
Coming up next, we will blitz the East, check in on all 3 teams in the Commanders division. Got an audio vault for you in the 5 o'clock hour today, right here on The Fan.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.